Hello and welcome back to the InfraDig podcast. I'm rather excited by today's podcast as it kills two birds with just the one stone. We're about to embark on a fireside chat with one of the founders of a fascinating international energy transition company, and I'm about to indulge in some flagrant self-promotion of our upcoming IJ Global ESG Awards. Let's stick with the rank self-promotion for a moment. Last year, IJ Global, Infrastructure Journal, hosted our first ever ESG Awards. With these awards, we seek to celebrate organizations, transactions, and individuals that have truly turned the dial on the environmental, social, and governance front with international energy and infrastructure finance being core. The deadline for submissions for this year's IJ Global ESG Awards was set for 10 August, but you know what we're like, that'll be extended to 17th, so there's plenty of time to get your submissions in. Okay, enough of that. I have with me today the winner of IJ Global ESG Infrastructure Deal of the Year from our inaugural event. That is Zenobe Energy, and they won for Project Blaze in the UK. But more on that soon. Let me make my introductions. Me, I'm Angus Leslie-Melville, Editorial Director of IJ Global, Infrastructure Journal, and I'm host of the InfraDig podcast series. For those of you not so well acquainted with InfraDig, let me explain. Through this podcast, we seek to further understanding of the infrastructure and energy asset class and shine a light on interesting developments. Today, I have with me Nicholas Beattie, Founding Director of Zenobe Energy Limited. Now, you can trace Nicholas's history back to Hambros Bank and BNP Paribas, where he was head of corporate finance. And in more recent years, since 2007, he's been something of a gun for hire and serial entrepreneur. Nicholas joined Zenobe in 2016, and it's been an interesting ride ever since. Nicholas, welcome to InfraDig, and congratulations for getting out of banking at the end of 2006. That was good timing.
Well, Angus, thank you very much indeed for inviting me on this podcast today. And as you say, timing's everything in life, and getting out of banking in 2006 was very important. I did begin to see that it was going to get increasingly difficult to persuade people to employ me. So that was another motivation at the same time.
often the key one. Yes. Nicholas, can you start off by telling us a bit about Zenobe Energy? Now, you launched in the UK in 2017 in energy storage, and now, I believe, you have operations in the UK, Benelux, New Zealand, and Australia. Please, give the listener a helicopter view of Zenobe and just what it is you do as a business.
Absolutely. So Zenobe is really focused on two major areas. One is the what we call network infrastructure, which is basically very large batteries that are connected to the grid and provide services to national grid. And that was the historical business that we really started from. And the second business that we're involved with is providing services to fleet operators as they electrify their fleets. And we really started that in the bus area because the buses were the first major fleet assets that required assistance to go from diesel or diesel hybrid across to electrification. The two parts of the businesses are very much linked by the software that we've developed, and I'll talk a bit more about that later on. But just going back to, you know, going back to, you said, my roots very quickly, we got into this because I'd started a couple of solar projects up in Northamptonshire, where I have a farm, and those solar projects enabled me to take the capacity out of the wires to stop my next door neighbour from putting up a wind farm. So from that background that we got I got involved into this industry, and we were the first people then to deploy batteries on those solar farms, which meant that they improved their efficiency, and we could see that benefit. And the developer that did that for us said, look, you know, we couldn't get the money to get people just solely interested in batteries, so are you interested? And that's when we started the business in 2016 to buy an initial four megawatt hours of batteries off that developer, which formed the core of the business into March 2017. Those batteries were all co-located with solar farms initially, and we've now gone on, and by the end of this year we'll have over 200 megawatt hours of batteries that are connected to the grid that provide the services I've mentioned earlier, and we will also have around about 600 also buses under operation that we own and support across the UK and also into Australia and New Zealand. So the business has developed since 2017 at quite a rate. The battery side really has a variety of services that we provide to National Grid, and increasingly we are connecting to the transmission system rather than distribution system. And what we focus on very much is on being able to provide more technically difficult solutions for them. And there are a number of contracts like reactive power, doing constraint management and things like that, that our batteries can do, that really provide greater opportunities for National Grid to continue to balance the system as we transition across from carbon-based power to renewable power. Yeah. On the bus side, we really address two major issues, which I'll talk further about later. But the two things is really providing the power in the depot that's required to support buses, because you can imagine up till now, the power's really only been there to give people cups of tea and pump diesel and do the lighting. That's very different once you start bringing in buses. You need to have really considerable quantities more power, and how to do that and optimize that is one of the main things we do. And the other bit is financing the actual buses themselves, which is obviously roughly half or a third of the value of that bus is a battery. So again, it all fits in with the battery element.
I've got two questions from what you've just been saying there. One, are you still friends with your neighbor who wanted to put up the wind farm? And the other one is, do you actually own the buses, or is it just the infrastructure and the energy and the battery storage, etc.?
Yeah, so obviously, on the first question, Angus, as you can imagine, I'm great friends with the next door neighbour. He's a good farmer, and he wants to look at different sources of income.
Yeah, but not a wind farmer.
Exactly.
On the buses.
Yes, I mean, what we try and do, we're a startup in the sense, well, we're beyond a startup now, but what we are is flexible, because we're a young business, and so we don't have any preconceptions about what we want to be able to provide to the customers. So we will provide to the customers what they're looking for. Our main focus is providing a turnkey solution for them. So if you're, for instance, an operator of a bus service, then you know this is quite a big leap for you. You've got engineers in your depot who've been focused on keeping diesel buses operating. They've been buying diesel buses. It's a very different technology to start doing that with electrics. So what we do is we come in, we can say, well, we can do everything for you. We can go to the provider of the electricity, the DNO, district network operator, and find out how much power is available for you. We can do all the analysis on how much the vehicles need to move around, so the different routes analysis. We can help you with the parking, which obviously optimizes how the batteries are then used. We then will give you a view as to what you require, and you might say, well, actually, you've only got 30 buses out of a 200 bus depot initially, but actually we start with the 30 buses, but we want a future-proof usage. There's no point you having cables that are installed that can only support 30 buses. You must have cables that can support the ultimate goal of doing the whole depot. Electrified. So you want to put the right size cables and so on. So we can give a lot of options at that point of time. And then when we do the actual installation, we can, generally speaking, for the infrastructure, we own the infrastructure and we provide that on a service basis, because that's the other part of the side of it, which is the sort of optimizing the financing. So we provide that as a service, because coincidentally, as we got into this market, IFRS 16 was becoming a problem for these operators, because they used operating leases previously. So obviously that was all, and the associated debt would have to sit on their balance sheet. So by providing it as a service, we changed it from CapEx to OpEx for them. And we also meant that we hold the assets on our balance sheet, and we're responsible, therefore, to ensure that that all operates. And if it doesn't operate properly, then we pay LDs or service credits. Similarly with the buses, exactly the same thing. We look at a bus and we see it as two assets. One is the battery and the other asset is the chassis. So the battery element we can provide again as a service. So we hold the battery on our balance sheet. We provide LDs, service credits, and so on and so forth. And then we provide the chassis purely as a operating lease. So, so there are sort of three contracts that come together, and we can provide, you know, either if a company feels it wants to do the financing of the chassis, then they do the financing of the chassis themselves, and we'll do the battery, and we'll do the charging infrastructure, and then we put the software across the top between the two elements so that we can then optimize the charging, make sure that we're taking details of how the bus is operating and how that charge is going in and when it's operating, that the battery is therefore being optimized, and provide greater services back to the customer by doing things like helping them do by giving driver training. So we reduce the amount of power that the buses use by anything between 20-30% by doing driver training using the data that we get off the vehicles through our software.
Well, sounds like a good idea. The number 33 bus, which I sometimes take, you'd think they were on Brands Hatch.
Well, it's quite amusing because some of the things we've done is, for instance, help people move bus stops. So if you're coming into this is getting into the nitty gritty, but if you're coming in, you know, and your bus stop is very close, for instance, to traffic lights, maybe then you're having to start the bus, use a lot of energy, and then almost slow it down almost immediately. So if you move your bus stop further away from that, then that creates energy efficiencies.
Oh, that's clever. Okay. Right. That's what you do at Zenobē Energy. Now, you won a coveted IJ Global ESG Award for Project Blaze. Now, this was a landmark £150 million sterling equity raise from Infra Capital that made it possible for Zenobē to accelerate investment into battery storage and bus fleet electrification in the UK. One of the IJ Global panel, we're always keen to push that point because it's independently chosen, as with all our awards. This judge said of Project Blaze that it provided battery solutions that enable transport systems to clean up their emissions to the benefit of the environment in which they operate. Another judge said this project encourages the use of second life batteries, so further extracting long-term environmental benefits. Nicholas, can you please tell me a bit about this project to power bus fleets and outline what makes your project so special?
Yes, I mean, I think it goes back partially to what I've said. You know, what if before we sort of came along, if you go into the market, there were a lot of people who were providing different parts of the solution. So I'll give you an example. I mentioned the software, which is connected into the telematics on the bus, which gives us the ability to help operators drive efficiencies out of the use of their vehicles. You could go and buy telematics, mostly from existing telematics providers who are providing that service on the diesels, and they've been adapting what they can provide for the electric vehicles as well. So you would go and buy that, and that would be a discrete piece of software which might provide some of what we provide, but nowhere near the amount of information that we provide. Equally, if you were looking at putting in charging infrastructure into your depot, you could go to one of the large DNO service arms who would come in, you know, Scottish and Southern or somebody like that, who would come in and put all the cabling in and would tell you this is what's doing. And then they would charge you something for that, and they walk away and you purchase all that equipment, and you might purchase the chargers from a third party, et cetera, et cetera. What we've aimed to do is frankly do something where we bring that all together as a turnkey offering so that we can actually provide to the customer what we feel is an optimum solution. It also means the customer's only got one person to deal with, because the problem you would have is that if you imagine you're trying to operate a service that has to be at 98% plus performance, because it is, you know, it is a service for the public. If there's a problem, the vehicles don't get charged properly and they can't do the routes the next day, and you've got a charger manufacturer, you've got somebody who put the cables in, somebody who's put the software in, and somebody else who's provided the buses and so on, so on and so forth. You can get four parties who are pointing their fingers at each other and saying, well, it wasn't my fault, it was his fault because he didn't plug it in properly or whatever. So the turnkey solution is very effective for the operator because it's only one person, if you like, one throat to choke, as they call it, they go after, and that's us. And we have all the suppliers behind us who can then support the optimal structure. But as I said, we're a young company and we're very flexible. So if somebody wants to do the financing, for instance, of the vehicle, they can do the financing of the vehicle, and we'll be happy to keep just focus on the sort of more electrical, more technically difficult parts, i.e. the battery on the bus and the charging equipment, and provide that. So I think flexibility, taking away the risks associated with this new technology, which is electric and so on, and being able to provide a real turnkey solution, which is backed by optimal financing and optimal accounting structures. So I put those in there, but being led by the engineering solutions, really the key to what we offer relative to our competitors.
Okay. Nicholas, that's really interesting, and the IJ Global panel of judges definitely agreed. Can we now shift on to the international focus? As I mentioned earlier, you have operations in the UK, that's where your headquarters are, but you're also involved in Benelux, Australia, and New Zealand. Where is the business taking you these days? Are you breaking into new markets beyond these? Quite
far-flung. Well, actually, we are, and you know, there's a certain amount of a land grab going on at the moment, as you can imagine. What's been very interesting for us is frankly, you know, being UK-based has been very positive, because actually the deregulation of the electricity markets in the UK has enabled us to do the things that we've done. And that's not just the electricity markets, but also we've got a very strong UK-based bus operating set of companies that are based here. We've got actually manufacturers, even bizarrely. Remember, we used to manufacture in that sector. So we've ended up with the bus side, certainly having having some very interesting people that we can deal with who are UK-based, but who also have operations outside the UK, whether they be manufacturers or whether they be operators. So we started here, and we were taken into Australia, as we saw, very similar sort of market in terms of the legal element, but also equally the operators are very similar. You know, they're subsidiaries of similar groups who are based there. And some of the buses that are used there, the manufacturing element is also in New Zealand, particularly ADL, which is, you know, the Scottish Alexander Dennis group who've got operations there. So we were taken to those markets by our customers. And what we found is that they used us to be able to, if you're a bus manufacturer, to sell more vehicles, and if you're a bus operator, to be able to get the buses deployed in a way which is efficient by using the services that we operate. So in Australia, we've done the first major electrification of a bus depot in Sydney, which is Leichhardt, which we're very excited about. We've done that in partnership with the local DNO, Transgrid, but also more importantly, in partnership with New South Wales, Transport for New South Wales, and ARENA, which is the federal government equity provider for green transition, and also CFAS, which is the debt provider for the same thing. In New Zealand, we work very closely with New Zealand GIF, which is, again, a green investment fund. And we've got a 50 million Kiwi dollar facility, which has supported us. Part of that is an accordion, but part of that is for a number of buses that we are funding out of the South Island at Christchurch. And there's more opportunities to happen there. So those two markets we would expect, if we stood still today, would represent about a third of the total market for Zenobi. As I mentioned to you earlier, you know, when we looked at Sydney, Sydney's got 8,500 buses. South Wales government want to make those electric. That's the same number of buses as there are in London, for example, and they want to do that by 2030. So that's a $10 billion Australian dollar opportunity for us. Mm-hmm. Not yet all of that, but it's a very good prize to go after. And that's mm-hmm. just in Sydney. So those markets are going to be key for us. We've gone into Benelux, mainly on the second life battery side. So we've got some good opportunities. We're working with a company we've taken a stake in the Netherlands to do second life batteries. And we spent a lot of time recently looking at addressing the North American market, where obviously there's huge opportunities now that the President Biden has chosen to, you know, to put some considerable funding into the green transition area. And that's a bill that's obviously going through the Senate at the moment. So we see considerable opportunity for the services that we offer there. And it goes back to my earlier comment, Natex, who are our largest client here in the UK. Mm-hmm. They have about 1,800 buses in the UK, but in North America, they've got over 30,000
school buses.
We're very interested in supporting them with their electrification, their school bus fleet. They're one of the largest school bus operators in North America. So that gives you that feeling that we're being taken by manufacturers and operators into markets. That's very exciting for the future of the company.
Yes, indeed. And you kind of hope that they're going to do something about New York taxis as well, because frankly, I think those are the dirtiest taxis I've ever been in. Mm. And definitely as they bellow out fumes, it's quite outrageous. And quite clearly they do need to clean up their act. But then, you know, we're only at the beginning of this transition ourselves here in the UK, so can't really point too much of a finger elsewhere. But fantastic.
Well, we're doing well. I mean, you know, we own more electric buses than there are in the whole of North America.
Is that right?
Yeah, as a company. So that's rather exciting. And you know, to pick up your point, we had to start with buses because those were the only decent sized commercial vehicles that were being electrified, because the major manufacturers in, you know, Mercedes and the Volvos and the DAFs and so on the commercial vehicle side, obviously had a lot of capital to write off from their diesel plants. So they were reluctant to get in and do that. Now we're beginning to see that. And all the you know, all the work that we've done around the buses is very applicable to depot-based vehicles, whether depot-based vans or light commercial vehicles or heavier commercial vehicles, if they're going to be electrified. There's huge opportunities for us to support the electrification of those vehicles. And that's a sort of adjacent industrial market that we're looking at the moment to support.
There was an electric, I wouldn't say who it was who said this because I can't remember whether it was off record or on record or sensitive or not, but somebody I was talking to in electric vehicle charging was saying that one of their sites, they basically signed up a contract with, I think it was the post office or some such, and they were bringing their vehicles, their new vehicles around to charge them at their site. And because they just didn't have any infrastructure available, and given the direction of travel, where, you know, anything like post office through to goodness milk floats, my goodness, they were electric when I was a kid, and beyond, and well, I suppose lorries, take your pick, really. Yeah. Everyone's going to have either dedicated sites or somewhere they can go to charge up.
Yeah. And it's interesting what you've said about the amount of power that's available. That is the big issue. And it is, you know, frankly, the people who've got in ahead to secure that access to the power, the people who are going to be doing well at the expense of their competitors. Mm-hmm. But equally, one of the reasons why we were able to do particularly well with the buses is that because we understood the battery element, the buses are out all day. Mm-hmm. So during the day, our battery can you be used to provide services? This is the batteries if we put them into a depot, be used to provide services National Grid. And then at night, but they get powered up just before the batteries come back. And then at night, the first two or three buses might be able to be charged off the grid, but the fourth one won't have enough power from the grid to make sure it has enough charge to be able to go out full the next morning. So we then charge it from the stationary battery in the depot. And it's what we're doing is load shifting using the battery. So that knowledge of the battery and the software and the load shifting and everything has become critical in being able to reduce the amount of access to power that you need, because it's often only to hit peak requirements, which become the issue for for people who are needing to look at charging larger and larger fleets.
So slightly off topic, but people keep on, whenever you talk about electric vehicles, people go, well, you know, we're facing this incredible issue that there's not enough electricity made. And I was talking to somebody a little while back and said, yes, the other day I was walking along the street and there were all these cars. They'd stopped, they'd run out of electricity. It was like a zombie apocalypse with cars here, there and everywhere. They went, really? I said, no, it's alive, of course. I said, I haven't seen a car run out of electricity ever. But is there a problem, or is it something we should be aware about for the future? Are there enough charging points? Or I kind of write it off as it's a problem that is being dealt with organically. I don't believe there's an issue at the moment. I think there's so many things like yourselves that are coping, that are doing interesting things to cope with this issue. But are we in a bad place?
I don't think we're in a bad place. I mean, I think we need more investment, frankly, in the electrical system. So there's going to have to be more distribution of power and investment in that side. Yeah. But we're in two markets. So we're very much in the business-to-business market, as you can hear. So we're very focused on depot charging from the bus point of view. Mm-hmm. We're very focused on providing the network infrastructure support to national grid and so on, with the big batteries as well. So it's all business to business what we do. We don't do domestic charging. We don't do charging at Sainsbury's or at Tesco's or whatever. But the government has put a lot of money into that area, and there's a lot of money being raised. And you know that there's been, you know, I think Instavolt was sold recently for a considerable sum of money to EQT.
Yep.
Huge plans for development. There's a company the other day called Raw. They raised a lot of money from Antin, as you know. Again, I think that their model is for developing of destination charging at specific sites and so on. So there's a lot of capital that's going around to support domestic vehicle charging and potentially, obviously, smaller commercial vehicle as well. And there's a lot of very clever stuff that's happening. You know, if you charge your van at home, as an example, there's a company that provides the software which will identify when your vehicle is being charged and then charge your employer for the cost of the electricity that's being used when you charge your vehicle at home.
Genius.
And separate that away from the cost of the electricity that's used to run the house for the household. So if you're somebody who's working for somebody who has a fleet of vans and they take their vehicles home, then they can do that. So there's a lot of clever stuff that's going on. I think a lot of the clever stuff's going to be, that's why I made the emphasis on the software, is on the software element, to be able to control the assets and not just when you plug it in then the thing immediately charges as fast as possible. That's not great for the battery. It's probably the wrong time. So you want something to be able to control that. And I think there's a lot of clever stuff that's going on that will help us. There's tons and tons of electricity that's being generated. The trouble is it's often being generated when we don't want to use it. And that's when you have the problems, you know, because it's very difficult to destroy energy once it's made. So what you have to do is you have to pay the wind farm operators to turn off the wind farms if you don't need it. And then that's called constraint management. That becomes very expensive. It goes on your iBill. We get quite cross about that, which is why, you know, we're looking at doing the constraint management work for National Grid so that we can divert the energy into very, very large batteries that will provide that and then reapply that energy when the demand goes back down into the lines. Because obviously most of the energy comes from Scotland and it gets used down in the south. So there's a lot of changes that we're seeing happening. It's good that, you know, the government has allowed capital to come in from outside the existing industry to support all this, because that's really what supports innovation rather than leaving it with the incumbents, in my view, network operators and National Grid to be the sole source of capital to drive this change.
Though I do find it bemusing that the supermarket along the road at Sainsbury's, ages back, put up 5 charging units and then reduced it to 2. There you go. But then I don't see people queuing and looking angry. But then again, most people only drive a couple of miles if they're ever going to drive any distance. I think what I'd like to hear about now is what are your plans for fundraising? This might be a bit sensitive, so tell me what you can. Now, Zenobē, capital-intensive business, with all these plans, it sounds like a bottomless pit of cash that you need. Tell us more.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing to say is we've had a very good group of supportive shareholders. We started with £25.5 million from private shareholders, who, frankly, a number of those had already financed the solar plants that I mentioned to you when I started the other business, and include with James Paston, one of my partners, was also involved in that as well. So we had a very good base of interested private money. We then had money that came in from Tiger Infrastructure Partner, early stage infra capital group from New York, which was 20 million. JIRA, which is owned by Chubu and TEPCO, the two largest generators in Japan, put 25 million in 2019. And then, as you say, the one for which we got this wonderful award.
Coveted award.
And made everybody in the room, frankly, just green. I mean, they were so green with jealousy. Coveted award for the Project Blaze, which was £150 million that we raised from Infra Capital. And again, they've been extremely supportive for what we're doing. And it's not just the UK that their capital has been used for. It's the Australian project that I was talking about. It's also into New Zealand and so on, and Benelux. So yes, I mean, we are accelerating our growth. I think the best numbers to look at, frankly, was April 20. We had 23 employees, and today we'll have 130, even once with COVID. So it gives you an idea. That gives you a more physical idea of how this is expanding. We're doing lots on the network infrastructure side as well as on the fleet side. So we do need access to more capital. And, shareholders are always restricted by, even if they go to their LPs, they're restricted by the size of their funds that they are drawing their capital from to support their investments, as you well know. So it looks likely we will need to get some further, and there's been rumors in the press about us appointing an investment bank to look at the options for our capital raise, and there's been rumors around the value of the business as well.
Are you confirming any of these rumors?
I can't possibly confirm them at this stage, but that people are beginning to talk about that. So we are looking very seriously at doing a capital raise in the final quarter of this year. What structure that will take will be interesting. It will really depend upon valuation as much as anything else, and where the shareholders will sit as a consequence, the existing shareholders as a consequence of that, will be very much determined by their view of the valuation of the business at that point, whether they want to put additional money in or whether they want to leave the shareholder list. And that will be determined by how long they've been involved and what they think is a good return for their investors. But you're right, we need more access to capital. Currently, our structure is we put the equity in through the topco, and that then gets used through the SPVs in different geographies, as well as the network infrastructure or the fleet side, or indeed the second life battery side. But I think that will probably develop over time. We've been very fortunate at optimizing it. I think you've already reported what we did with the private placement for the fleet side. That was the first private placement giving us access to 16-year money, including Scottish Widows and Aviva, who were in that as well. So that's been a fantastic platform for us, and we want to be able to use that to raise additional capital to finance more of the fleet development here in the UK and in Ireland, and do a similar type of structure in Australia and New Zealand as we develop in those markets as well. From a debt perspective, we're also currently in the market to raise additional nearly £200 million to support the network infrastructure side. So we keep the debt on the network infrastructure and the fleet side apart, in the sense that they're two very different type of underneath it, the business is very different, and the sources of cash flows are very different. So it optimizes the pricing that we can get, frankly, on the debt.
Well, there we go. And you as for other countries, we did mention this earlier. I don't think we went into other geographies you're looking at.
Sorry, you're right to pick me up on that. I mean, I think we talked a bit about what President Biden was doing. So yes, we'll definitely be going into looking at North America more seriously for both fleet and network infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Basically, as you know, if you're looking at the US, it's not a country. I mean, you have to make decisions about which areas you're going for, and which states are the best. And there's huge differences between how the different states are supporting, for instance, school buses is a very interesting area for us for obvious reasons. And a very interesting area to convert because there's enormous drive from the school district authorities to make the vehicles, which are really quite, you know, backward.
Yes.
The diesel, turn them into electric. So there's good support there. And equally, you know, there's a big movement on the northeast side to go electric and to take that. And we're seeing, you know, a lot more potential opportunities with offshore wind farms being built, to be built in the new future. And the technology that we've developed here to be able to optimize the use of those assets being applied in that part of the states. So we see, you know, again, that's huge opportunities for the company in the future. But we all know that, you know, you can't rush into North America. You have to lay your plans very carefully. Otherwise, you end up having a problem on your hands rather than something that's
You end up losing your shirt if you don't plan that stuff well.
That's what I mean. I could bore you about a story about Hambros, but I don't think I'll do that now.
Good old Hambros. That's one from yesteryear.
Yeah.
Nicholas, thank you very much. It's been really interesting. Thank you so much for taking time to join me on InfraDig and talking to us about Zenobē Energy. And congratulations once again on last year's winning a coveted IJ Global ESG Award. Now that we're going to our second year and submissions are flooding in, I think it's fair to say that they're coveted. Thank you once again, Nicholas, and I hope to see you in person before long.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Angus, and that was really enjoyable chat. So I really thank you for your time as well. And well, we hope that we'll be able to see whether we can get anywhere near getting another coveted award from you.
Quite right. Let's stick with the word coveted. I do like it. And for the listener, I hope you've enjoyed this latest episode of the InfraDig podcast. If you can, you can find it on all the usual sites from Buzzsprout through to Spotify. So please take time to run through some of our other interviews, maybe even like, share, follow, you know the drill. But for now, I leave you once again with the express desire that you found this to be anything but InfraDig.